Is this where the Texans can be on the cutting edge? The medical staff. Matt Khalil, the newest offensive lineman, was interviewed by the media yesterday and said this about one of the reasons why he decided to choose the Houston Texans.
They've had a lot of great players who have had setbacks, and I feel like they've developed a system, you know, to keep people healthy, and you know, a lot of communication, and a lot goes into keeping these guys healthy and coming up with the right schedules for each individual guy. So just kind of hearing that and everything they do, and really excited me. I felt like it was a place, you know, where if I went anywhere else, I don't think I would have the opportunities I have here as far as being healthy and actually, you know, thriving and feeling good and being the best possible player I could be. So with everything they do in communication, you know, in the training room, in the weight room, and with the coaches, you know, a lot of people talking to each other. So everyone's on the same page, and you know, I feel like put together a good program for me, and I'm really excited.
Matt Khalil would expand yesterday on this sports science department and what they can do.
I'd never been anywhere where they did something like this, and it really excited me, and I feel like it's a place where they're going to keep me healthy and take care of me and, you know, get me out in the field. That's what it's all about, is staying healthy through the season and playing throughout the whole year. At the beginning of my career, the first 4 years, I didn't miss a snap, and, you know, it just injuries started piling up. So, I mean, if I'm healthy and I'm feeling good, I'm out there. I'm not one to take breaks if I'm feeling good or if I need rest. I mean, if I'm healthy, I like to be out there contributing and be out in the field.
So I want to believe this, but I'm still in a wait-and-see mode.
There was something he said there that got me genuinely excited. Because we talked yesterday about, okay, the Astros are on the cutting edge of things. The Rockets are on the cutting edge of things. Where are the Texans potentially ever going to be on the cutting edge of things? And I think some of it might have started last year when they brought in that Luke Richeson for the sports science department, and he ended up leaving. But I think the department remains, and I think they're doing some things on the injury prevention and on the physical training side of things that make a whole lot of sense. And you saw it somewhat last year, maybe pay some dividends because they had many fewer guys on IR. The problem is the receivers were banged up all the hell. So sometimes it's just luck, sometimes it does work, but I also think this is a multi-year thing. The thing that Matt Khalil said that excited me, and this might sound minor, but it's actually a big deal, was when he said that the athletic trainers and the strength and conditioning staff are on the same page. Like the strength coach and the trainers. There's something that happens on a lot of NFL teams, and it's infuriating. Sometimes the athletic trainers will release a guy to play, and that's when he's allowed to go work with the strength coach. And then the strength coach gets this guy, and he's like, he's released to play in practice, but his right leg is like 200 pounds stronger than his left leg. Like, he's not even weight room strong. How do you think he's going to do out on the field? So trainers, the medical staff working in concert with the strength trainers, the strength and conditioning coaches, isn't always as good as you'd think it would be. And it seems like the Texans have really taken a lot of pains to hire smart people and actually pay attention to all this and have everybody on the same page and be on the same page with the dietitians and all of that. So I like that because Bill O'Brien strikes you as an old school guy. I think there's a lot more new age in him than he lets on. And I think a lot of it has to do with everything that Matt Khalil talked about. So the upside with Matt Khalil is, all right, if the Texans are going to be cutting edge with anything, if it's that they can take a guy like Matt Khalil and actually get him back to health and get him productive and get a guy that was a former top five draft pick playing like a top five draft pick, I'd be all about that. Because that means they're like, man, you're getting huge bang for your buck there.
That would be a major edge if they can actually do something like that. I'm still
It's a big if.
It's a big if, yes. Yeah. Now, I agree with your point, Seth, about it does seem, especially the last year or two in the offseason, that O'Brien's been more new age in like changing the food in the cafeteria, hiring different kinds of people. So I do want to give him credit with that. And with Khalil, though, I'm in a wait-and-see approach. And I wonder, part of the reason why they signed him, did they sign him thinking, hey, we can keep him healthy, whereas other teams were unable to do that?
That's what I'm wondering, too. And I mean, some of the things that Khalil said were interesting. I know we have the audio of this, so I'm just going to put this together really quickly. He essentially said that people know what I am. People know what I can be. And I wonder on that front, because what we've seen out of Matt Khalil thus far in his career, I don't think it's been anything to write home about. People were shocked when he got that contract that contract to go play with the Panthers.
Right.
They didn't think he would get it.
And I think he was playing through injury when he was in Minnesota, too. And that's part of the problem is that when you look at film from him earlier in his career, there was a certain athleticism. Like, there was a silkiness to his movement that you just haven't seen in the last few years. So it would be a huge coup if the Texans could get him to moving back like he was then. That's the upside. The upside would be huge. That would be incredible. The downside is, okay, you're going to be out a few million dollars on a one-year contract. In Gain, this is what Gain has done. He's taken calculated risks with one-year deals. I'm a fan of that. I like it if it works out. I wish they could land a big-name free agent that actually comes in, and even if he isn't awesome, at least solidifies something. But I had said last year that I'm going to give him 2 years to fix the offensive line. We're closing in on the last couple months by which they can improve the offensive line.
Yes.
And between the draft and then either Ashantrell Henderson or Matt Khalil, maybe they're further along than I had hoped for. But in terms of whether they're cutting edge or not, to get back to the medical side of things, it's not just the medical side of things. It's all this biometric data that they have right now. The NFL is releasing all this information they've used from all the tracking devices they've had in players' uniforms. And some teams are, like, barely even sniffing it. Other teams are diving in deep to it. I feel like the Texans might be diving in deep to it. And if you think about what this stuff can give you on the player scouting side of things, when you start to see, okay, successful wide receivers move this fast at certain portions of the route, or they come out of their breaks at this speed. Guys that are about to get injured are moving this fast in a game compared to how fast they are at other times. Like, you can start to glean a whole bunch of information from it. And I'm just encouraged that I think it seems to me like the Texans, without ever saying it publicly, it really seems like they're going to dive deep into that stuff, which gives you an edge. Like, well, it's these small little edges across the board that end up adding up over time. That's something the Astros would do. That's something the Rockets would do.
If they can keep Khalil and Ashantrell Henderson healthy, that would be a big deal, and that would convince me more on this whole topic that maybe with the medical staff that they're on the cutting edge. I'm still in a wait-and-see approach. I mean, I remember when the Rockets brought in Eric Gordon nearly 3 years ago, one of the things that they said was they looked at some things and they felt like they could keep him healthier than he had been in New Orleans, and they've largely been right.
Yeah.
Eric Gordon's played about 68, 70 games a year, where he was playing about 10 or 15 games less per year with New Orleans. Like, they said that 3 years ago, and that's proven out to be true. So with the Texans, I want to see that happen.
The problem is, the problem is when we talk like this, now the next time somebody gets an injury, they're going to say, like, oh, where's that newfangled training approach? You're never going to prevent all injuries. Everybody gets injured in football. It's just a matter of having enough of an edge that fewer guys get injured. I don't know, and I think that the wide receivers were a huge issue with injuries last year. Based on just what Bill O'Brien said about Kiki QT at the owners' meeting, I feel like they think they've learned something from that. And the way they manage their wide receivers and hamstring injuries and everything might change a little bit. So it's never going to prevent all hamstring injuries, but they might get a little bit better at it.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Wednesday. Time now for Mad Takes. There is a study that indicates that if you fake a smile at work, it may lead to heavier drinking down the road.
Oh, that's the problem then.
Down the road?
When I say down the road, I meant after
now?
Hours.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
I meant after hours. So people, there are researchers at Penn State and the University of Buffalo. They study the drinking habits of about 1,500 people who work with the public. So food service workers, nurses, teachers. And the people who had to fake a smile or exaggerate happy emotions, they were less able to control their alcohol intake once they left work.
No kidding.
Don't fake a smile.
Well, how come you're not... Why do they assume that you're faking a smile when you do that? That's a genuine joy of working at Chick-fil-A, isn't it?
I think the way they ran the experiment was that they
asked people, like, are you faking
smiles,
a smile or not?
Exaggerate their emotions.
And later on. I wonder if that's, like, a good thing or a bad thing, though. Is it that faking the smile, because there's all this research that shows actually faking a smile can make you more happy. So are they faking a smile and then going out and feeling more sociable, or is faking the smile for that long killing their soul to the point where they need to deaden it further? Which is usually my, yes. my choice of alcohol. It's a strategy.
Yeah, you just burn you think it's the it all
one.
Away.
You think it's the second one. They it crushes their soul that they're faking it for that long.
Well, let's be honest though. Most people, when you smile at work, it's like an awkward glance and side smile as you walk by someone that you really don't want to talk to.
Well,
right?
No, but that's you. They're talking about, like an actual job where you have to face the customer.
I like
where
how
you're
Seth
saying
just,
like, hi, how can I help you? I'd like a bigger tip, so I'm going to smile and maybe touch you on the shoulder. Yeah. That.
Mike, Seth is not wrong on that front, so that is just me. You know, that's the worst. As you walked out, so we essentially, for those who have not been to 24 Greenway Plaza, our building is essentially set up like a long track.
It's a big track.
Right, it's a big track that goes around in a circle, and there are these somewhat narrow corridors, and you'll be walking, and every now and then you'll see someone walking by you, and you know some of them, and you don't know some of them, and you walk by, and look, I'll be honest, I'm from the Northeast, and I am not one to be like, hey, how's it going? Especially when it's the morning, because I'm generally a little bit tired, and I'm just running on caffeine fumes at that point in time. So sometimes I'll look down at the ground, act like I'm looking at my phone when I'm not. Yeah. Other times I'll just like sort of look off to the side. It's very socially awkward, and it's not how I act when I'm outside of work, but when I'm at work, I do act that way.
You act like you don't own a smartphone. Look at your phone.
Well, he did. Yeah, he's looking at it right now.
But that's what I mean. Yeah, you just
stop awkwardly smiling at me, Seth.
What's that?
Stop awkwardly smiling at me, Seth. This is how I get away from it. Looking down at my phone.
But that's what I mean, though. Like, I mean, like, what? You don't have to feel awkward about that. You're wrapped up in your phone, especially here, because people know you only have 3 or 4 minutes between breaks. Anybody that sees you in the hallway knows that if you're looking at your phone, there's a good chance you're like trying to get ready for the next segment or whatever. You don't have to worry about this.
Or at least
you're overthinking it.
At least we make them feel like we're getting ready for the next segment.
Yes. Okay, I wanted to run through some more of the most annoying sounds in sports that we were discussing earlier in this hour, because we got some really good texts on the text line 713-572-4610. We got a lot of texts about the Aggie whoop and any sound an Aggie makes ever. I will say that if I go to a bar, in particular Pub Fiction, no matter how nice Aggies are for I get uncomfortable watching a game in public around them in mass when I'm not at Kyle Field. It feels really culty to watch a game like at Pub Fiction with them when they're all doing the swaying back and forth and the chants. And I saw a lot of that during the long overtime game between A&M and LSU this past fall.
Totally agree with you. It's nothing against Aggies, but if I'm going to watch a game and there are tons of Aggies, it feels very cultish. All the sounds being made.
Yeah, so, I enjoy it.
There are some other.
I feel like, and then
you
I
enjoy
sometimes
it.
Sometimes I want to. I've had fantasies like impersonating an Aggie, like see if I could crack the circle and get in and like find out their real secrets and like the way things really operate. Maybe get a job offer or something. Could I do that? Like,
no, you need the ring.
Is that like stolen glory if I do that? I know I could buy a ring off of eBay. There's enough broke Aggies out there.
That's, you know what? That's
shots fired.
Just wait until oil prices go down a little lower and then just, yeah.
But don't you have somewhat meaty fingers?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of fat broke Aggies out there.
You're gonna
too.
Wear like a ring.
What do you mean, like,
or wear it like a necklace?
Yeah, are there only skinny ring your fingers out there?
I guess I don't know.
Sizes, like Mike is an ageist. What the hell?
I feel like you got moosely hands. It's a little different than flabby hands.
Yeah, but there's
hands.
Like 20,000 Aggie grads a year. There's a bunch of rings out there I can get.
All right, well, you know what? I think you should try it. And then you just like you knock it on the table when you run up to somebody.
My my brother was out one night and with Pete Mitchell, the old tight end from Boston College, and he convinced they were out and they were drinking with these guys from West Point. They'd met him, and my brother convinced him that he was a Annapolis, what do they call him? Not cadets there.
Midshipman?
A midshipman, yeah. And then he taught these guys from West Point, like, the midshipman's dance.
That's funny.
It was called the Annapolis jig, and he taught them this goofy dance and did it all.
Other annoying sounds in sports, the Mississippi State cowbell, the annoying foghorn at Gillette Stadium during Patriots games. Chris Berman yelling back, 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 back during the home run derby.
Yeah, that one's actually okay. I like Chris Berman. We need more Chris Berman in sports. The cowbell, yeah, that gets old. My high school, we had that for our football games too. I actually still have the cowbell. And while there's like a fond place in my heart for the cowbell that had my number on it, it was annoying.
It's an annoying sound.
This is actually to clear something up because one of our listeners thinks Mike's a monster.
Well, he is.
He says, it's been a couple of days and I'm still upset over Mike's take that Tiger Woods was not sorry about cheating on his wife. Did you read that somewhere?
Yeah, who are you, Mark Ryan?
Yeah, I responded to that guy. I said I was just talking too fast, and I said a few things that I don't really believe. Like, that's the best way I can explain it.
You don't think he genuinely felt...
I said on Monday, after Tiger won the Masters, one of the things I said later in the show about Tiger's popularity and unpopularity among some is that he came across as unapologetic.
Really? I thought he got, like, huge... I thought people thought that was a good moment for him.
My take was wrong. It was a wrong take. Honestly, when you talk 4 hours a day into a microphone, you're gonna say things, you're gonna think, like, what the hell was I saying?
Not me.
And that is where it falls into that category.
So what do you... But do you think that some people do think that he wasn't... That he wasn't genuinely sorry, or no? I know yours not saying that you...
I've been doing more listening on people about Tiger winning the Masters.
Right.
One interesting story I heard, Ryan Russillo on Bill Simmons' podcast, because Ryan did a show with Scott Van Pelt on ESPN for a long time. Scott Van Pelt is friends with Tiger Woods. And Russillo had a story this week about how when all that was going down, what Tiger was feeling a little bit was like, hey, listen, I know what I did wasn't good, but I didn't go out and, you know, kill somebody.
Right, right.
So why is everybody being so harsh on me during that time?
If you think about what other professional athletes have done and, like, where it's gone completely uncovered, like, it's just, like, there's, sports writers aren't going to write an expose about a guy cheating on his wife. Like, that's just, it doesn't happen. Like, it's just one of those, like, or any athlete in general. Like, if a sports writer is covering a women's tennis player and she has an affair, they're not going to cover that. So that was what was so strange about Tiger Woods, was that it boiled over into the public conversation and then blew up so huge. So I bet there was part of Tiger that I'm sure he felt bad that he got caught, for sure, obviously. And I don't think he liked his family getting ripped apart, but there could also simultaneously be this, like, what the hell? Like, why am I getting this treatment? And I guess the simplest answer is it's because he was such a cultural and social icon, like the level of nobody else. If you look at the number, when Tiger Woods was in his heyday, 5% of Americans said golf was their favorite sport to watch on television. That's at less than 1% now. Like, there was a whole segment of society that was a golf fan specifically because of Tiger Woods. And I think that's why I blow it. Even more so than maybe, let's say, Michael Jordan or somebody else, like other guys that have
had popular NBA
other
players.
Guys that have had issues with their marriages. It just never even got out.
Bartolo Colon and his two families that know about each other. I would say the other details too, Seth, are that his ex-wife beat the hell out of his car with a golf club. And those details made it a lot more scandalous than I think your traditional affair. Because when it blew up like something that you would see essentially on a soap opera.